I think by and large, the objectives of an individual in terms of their, let's say, their financial objectives can differ, or they differ from one individual to the other.
Hi, welcome to a new year and welcome to a new season of Make Money the Podcast. We pick it up from where we left, and it's always the goal is to give you some investment and business nuggets that would be useful to you. And today we'd like to talk about infrastructure bonds. And why infrastructure bonds? This is a unique category of government securities that never comes so often, but when it does, it's offering you the highest rate of return with no tax deduction on your interest income, hence making it quite lucrative for you as an investor. And so we'd like to speak about more about infrastructure bonds, and I'm happy to have a senior research analyst at Investment Bank, and Mr. Ronnie Choka, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Kafa.
And I did try there to set a quick contest around what infrastructure bonds are. And of course, I think the first question stems from their nature. They don't sell, you know, it's not a routine sale of these bonds. So we don't see them every now and then. So it's unique in that. So about 2 to 3 every financial year. But you get the highest return without any tax on the interest and there. Maybe we would go to the structuring of these. Of course, we know this makes them quite lucrative for investors. Anybody looking to invest in government securities, then, you know, your prime paper is the infrastructure bond. Do you think these are deliberate structuring that you have the highest return on a paper that actually is costing you nothing in terms of taxes?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kefa. Mm. Maybe I can just do a brief intro as a brief background myself, then get into the first question. I'm Ronnie Choka. I'm working as a senior research analyst at Capital A Investment Bank, which is a newly launched franchise. We are the leading fixed income traders in the market, and indeed it is a pleasure to be hosted on your show to talk about one of the subjects that is of most interest, especially to our Kenyan investors, the subject on infrastructure bonds. So maybe I can quickly hit the ground running. Yep. With infrastructure bonds, yes, they are very, very attractive. They tend to command significant attention in the retail market. By retail investors, more so because not only are you getting high-end interest rates on a what we call risk-free basis, you're also exempt from taxation on these papers. So withholding tax does not apply on infrastructure bonds. And I think this is what appeals to most investors, since the net return is simply the stated gross return.
Yeah.
I think to a large extent it is. The government is very, very intentional on having infrastructure bonds designed in the particular form it is. Firstly, because with such an offering of tax-free returns and high-end or top-tier returns, you are able to attract as much investments from the CBK's perspective. They're able to attract as much subscriptions as possible whenever they need to. And it becomes a very efficient tool of raising capital, specifically because now, even if you look at all infrastructure bond prospectuses, they are particularly earmarked for infrastructure projects in any fiscal year. So the proceeds of any infrastructure bond issue are expected to be channeled towards infrastructure projects like building dams, mega dams, hydropower generation plants. It could be mega highways and so on. Some can have a positive ROI, some can just be, you know, for social benefit. Yes.
All right. So I think we spoke about their rarity, or rather they're seldomly issued. So it's not every other day that you'll find, you know, unlike your T-bill auction that's weekly, it's rare to find an infrastructure bond sale, and we know they are mostly timed around twice a financial year, so beginning of the year and towards the end of the year.
Yes.
And so that brings me to the February infrastructure bond we have, February 2025, mm-hmm. that closes on the 12th of this month.
Yes.
I think it comes where we know, you know, rates have been moving lower, and we can see the attempt by the central bank to try and make sure the interest rate is, you know, is not as high, or to align with the movements in interest rates. Yes. And we've seen them reopen an older infrastructure bond as opposed to issuing a new one where, you know, you'd start worrying about where the rates might go on that. Given where interest rates are moving, I think it's something we spoke about on this podcast towards the end of last year, that interest rates are coming back lower and perhaps there's an opportunity cost to maybe move your money elsewhere. But for someone still interested, you know, I've not had, you know, any money in an infrastructure bond or any government security for that matter. The feeling is that we're in the last, what I would call, last innings for anyone who watches any cricket or baseball would be more familiar with this. You know, we're in the last bit, you know, in that extra time of, you know, locking in that higher return. Does this then still make it as lucrative, the February issue, as lucrative as, say, February last year when we had, you know, the highest returning paper I think I've seen in quite some years, you know, 18.46% last year. Yeah. We are sadly not at the same levels as we were last year. Exactly. But do you still feel this is an opportunity for someone, you know, wanting to diversify, or someone, you know, they feel this is perhaps that opportunity to get into, you know, a tax-free instrument?
Yeah, thank you. I think you're raising a very important question. And I think even for your listeners, one thing we need to understand is that interest rates tend to be dynamic. They tend to fluctuate from time to time, depending on global conditions, the risk sentiment in the geopolitical space. It also tends to fluctuate based on inflationary trends. So higher inflation means central banks are likely to raise interest rates, and the vice versa is true. When inflation is cooling down, as it now is, central banks tend to have a wider headroom to lower interest rates, and they tend to do this to spur economic growth. So the reason why maybe an investor may be curious, why was government issuing an infrastructure bond last year at 18%?
Yeah.
And this year they're issuing at 14%.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a mismatch, right?
Yeah.
The reason why these infrastructure bond rates are now lower than last year is because the risk environment last year was very, very elevated. In Kenya in particular, we had very high inflation rates, averaging at around 9%. We also had a very weak exchange rate at the point. We are just peaking at around 160 at the time. So that also exchange rate premium was also elevated. It was also at the same time when investors were very, very cautious regarding whether Kenya would be able to pay off the euro bond that was due for June last year.
Yeah.
So all those risks are priced in by investors, and that's what gives you your term premium whenever you're pricing for bonds. So when we compare that and contrast it with the situation now, inflation has cooled down rapidly. We are now at 3%. The exchange rate has stabilized following a set of reforms by the Central Bank of Kenya. Our reserves are above the minimum threshold by the CBK.
Yeah.
So the risk premium has shrunk, meaning now the government can now issue infrastructure bonds at slightly lower interest rates. And from their perspective, you have to understand, I mean, it's fiscally responsible of them to. You can't sustain issuing 18, 19, even 20% coupon infrastructure bonds, even if you wanna make it, you wanna give a good deal to investors. There has to be a balance. So right now, given the market direction as it is, interest rates have come down rapidly and they're even projected to go lower. So tying to your question on whether it's a good time to lock in this attractive yield on infrastructure bonds, I think you are getting the best in the market, especially if you're able to do competitive bidding. You can really stretch the yield to maturity and still get filled by the CBK. More so because now we have a buyback. The CBK is also spearheading.
Yeah.
And maybe I don't know whether that deserves a separate
That may deserve a different day conversation. Yeah. But I do understand what you mean. You know, it's still a good opportunity. And
yes,
actually, you raise an important point about the cyclical nature of interest rates.
Yes.
It's something you also had. You know, I think once we raise the trend will be lower. We had a whole conversation with Churchill around, you know, where the interest rates are moving and what to do about it. Do you feel that perhaps maybe there's more contentment needed among investors? You know, there are people who missed out on the 18.46% IFB from last year, and now I think you get the best around, you know, 14.2%. A coupon is what you can get, or a return for the current issue, you know, trading now. Do you feel there's a lot of contentment needed, you know, to understand that you ride along? As an investor, you ride along through these waves of interest rates, because I think there's a time people just thought, you know, this era might even push into, you know, the 20s, the 21%. There was that time last year, and like you mentioned, the risk we were facing. But now those risks have not materialized, and we are back, you know, we are back down to where, you know, you might call it common sense in a sense of where interest rates are. Do you feel as an investor, then you just ride through these, you know, take the premium now, you know, take the premium you can get now, which is 14.2%. Don't worry too much about what will be, because again, like you say, future rates will always price in the risks that are there.
I think, the financial market environment is that change is the only constant. So with interest rates coming down, as the CBK is currently nudging them to be, if the forward outlook, or if our outlook 1 year from now is that interest rates will be even lower than where they are now, then it is very rational to lock in the high yields in this environment, knowing that maybe 1 year from now, maybe we may be at 12 or even 11% infrastructure bonds, right?
Yeah.
So I think it would make rational sense to add or to layer such a high yielding infrastructure bonds to your portfolio, especially knowing that these infrastructure bonds are very few and far between. We may have usually have 2 to 3 infrastructure bond issues or reopenings in any financial year, and these are also not guaranteed, knowing that the central bank doesn't give, let's say, a 1 year calendar of issues. So they may even decide, you know, we can have even a 1 year drought of infrastructure bonds. So it's always favorable, you know, to lock in the high yield whenever they pop up. Otherwise you may be getting taxable FXDs, maybe even lower coupon offerings over the next 1 year.
I'm going to move to structuring of a portfolio, you know, a personal portfolio around government securities. You know, you have the option from T-bills, which are, you know, the shorter maturing papers. Then we move to bonds. You know, it's either an infrastructure bond, you know, the tax-free one, the premium one we all want. Or the other, you know, FXD bonds where, you know, it's 10% to 15% tax on the interest earned. Now, this is a question I get a lot from people who always ask me, since we have a feeling it's 2 to 3 IFBs every year, can I just have a portfolio of just IFBs? Can I just purpose, you know, I'll skip the FXDs. I'll maybe use that opportunity to put some cash away. And of course, at 50,000, the minimum now. So a lot of people do bypass your T-bills, your FXDs, and just put their priority on IFBs. Do you feel it's locking in too much on one category of paper, or is it actually a good strategy, you know, just having IFBs as your government securities portfolio, enjoy the tax-free benefits, and, you know, not worry too much about what's happening with the rest of the issuances.
In terms of portfolio management, in terms of whether you can rely on having only infrastructure bonds in your personal bond portfolio, I think there are certain challenges that can hinder your ability to, you know, plan or to add them to your portfolio, knowing that, one, they are not certain. They come once in a while, and they are not guaranteed. So the government, on average, they tend to do two in a year, but they can decide to skip. For whatever reason, they can decide, let's just do FXDs and only do IFBs whenever we have really mega project we want to carry out, right?
Yeah.
So yes, it can be a very good strategy. Usually we recommend what we call barbell strategies.
Mm-hmm.
So a barbell bond investment strategy is where you have like a barbell. On the one end of the barbell, you have short-term T-bills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And on the other end of the barbell, you have long-term infrastructure bonds.
Yeah.
So the advantage of evening them out this way is that despite any changes in interest rates in the market, you'll be cushioned in the sense that these long-term infrastructure bonds, you know, when interest rates move up, they tend to lose value.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that effect will be evened out by your ability to these maturing short-term T-bills, you'll be able to reinvest at the high prevailing rates.
Yeah.
On the other side, if interest rates come down rapidly, on this T-bill side, you're exposed to the risk of reinvesting at low single-digit rates.
Yeah.
But now because your infrastructure bonds are suddenly rising in value,
mm-hmm.
then that compensates for that loss you're getting.
Yeah.
So that's a very popular strategy mm-hmm. we usually recommend to our investors.
Investors, yeah. Something else people struggle with, I know this came up from your response here, just understanding the understanding of yields and prices, and the, you know, it would be a whole lesson about how bond prices and bond yields move, you know, opposite each other, you know. The question here is whether sometimes as a person you buy these things to maturity, perhaps save yourself from, you know, the danger or the risk posed by, you know, having to sell in the market, like you said. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the value of what you hold will no longer be, you know, how much you had put in. How does an individual walk through this? How do you navigate? Do you just buy to maturity where, you know, you're just assured of interest payments, you know, every 6 months until, you know, you receive back your principal at the amortization stage? Or can an individual replay the game of what would be a bigger institutional investor where, you know, you're looking for opportunities to offload what you might have?
Mm-hmm.
Do the same exist for a person? Or would you feel it's a bit of a stretch here?
Yeah. I think, by and large, the objectives of an individual in terms of their, let's say, their financial objectives can differ, or they differ from one individual to the other. Some individuals can afford to lock in or lock away capital for prolonged periods of time, let's say even more than 10 years, 20 years comfortably, right? Whereas other individuals may be looking for short-term investment opportunities, looking to, you know, draw down their capital in the near term, let's say 1 year from now, 2 years from now.
Yeah.
So the advisory tailored to individual A will differ from individual B, just the same as for individuals.
Yeah.
Pension funds can afford to lock away capital or invest in longer
20,
term
20, 30 years, yeah.
Whereas banks have to only invest in short-term assets. Short-term bonds, because, you know, they have more frequent withdrawals compared to pensions. Yeah, so the decision to whether to hold a bond to maturity or to trade it within a short time will vary. But what I can say is whenever you are making the decision to invest, first you have to ascertain what is your time horizon. How long can you afford to lock away capital without really requiring it to be liquidated urgently?
Yeah.
You know? For some individuals, they can afford to lock, let's say, 5 years away. Some can afford to lock away 10 years away. Others, 1 year. That decision is very key, because if you don't pay attention to that, you may be forced to liquidate maybe at a loss.
Yeah.
You know, when you're panic selling, or you really want to withdraw your funds midway to maturity. You invested in a 17-year bond.
Yeah.
But say 2 years in, you
want out.
You
yeah.
have an Something emergency. You want to lock out. You want to withdraw your money. When you go to CBK, they'll have to rediscount your bond at, I think, over 300 basis points above above the market yield.
Yeah.
But the good thing is that we have the secondary market now, so you can be able to fetch at fairly average price, depending on market conditions, of course.
Yeah,
depending on where interest rates are in the market. But generally, it's very good that investors take time to, you know, reflect on that question.
Yeah.
As they invest. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So before wrapping up, I think we'll talk of this attempt to tax interest and on infrastructure bonds. And luckily, you know, the Finance Bill 2024 was defeated. The tax laws amendment bill tried again to another attempt at taxing the interest on infrastructure bond. Again, it didn't happen, didn't sail through.
Yes.
So we are still able to invest in a tax-free paper.
Yes.
You know, especially for retail investors who would really enjoy quite this. Do you believe the government would make a future attempt again at doing this? Because they've already tried it twice, didn't work through. There's a feeling that there's some specialness, you know, a special paper handed down to papers yet. Taxes should be uniform across the board. For now, we continue enjoying the tax-free returns. You know, wherever the coupon lands, that's your return in a sense. So 14.2%, for instance, for the February infrastructure bond. But going forward, do you believe the government might make another attempt to not really dissuade us, but a curious case of taxing these interests? How do you see how do you see that?
Yeah, I think, yes, it's true. As you point out, we've seen a very concerted attempt to, you know, include infrastructure bonds into the tax basket. And I think it was an article you wrote regarding the foregone interest that the KRA is, you know, giving away.
Foregoing by failing to tax interest on infrastructure bonds. Yeah.
To the tune of even over 20 billion every financial year.
Yeah.
Yes, in as much as there is some foregone interest, on the other hand, you have an instrument which you can rely on as an exchequer to raise capital, you know, from the shelf, you know, with easy access and being able to, you know, most infrastructure bond issues tend to be oversubscribed. I don't think if the government now starts taxing infrastructure bonds, I don't necessarily think they can guarantee that they have a tool that they can, you know, float and record an oversubscription year in, year out. So, and I don't see why they should, because if they want taxable instruments, they have FXDs.
Yeah.
So they can simply forego issuing IFBs in a particular financial year.
Yeah.
That way they are collecting withholding taxes
on every other paper issued.
Yeah. But they can reserve the IFBs for those special situations. Let's say we have a year where we have so many maturities as such, they really need to record an oversubscription.
Yeah.
That's when an IFB really comes in handy. Yeah. So it would really be a huge disservice to the CBK, even the National Treasury. It would be shooting itself in the foot.
Yeah.
Were they to start taxing IFBs.
Yeah.
Even if they say 5%, investors will still record, you know, it's being taxed.
Yeah.
The appeal will slightly diminish.
Lastly, we speak about the structure of IFBs as one targeted at infrastructure projects.
Yes.
But then you get a feeling like, sometimes it's going like, I know we didn't want to get into the whole buyback scenario. That would be a different situation. But sometimes you get the feeling that sometimes the government is just short of money and infrastructure bond works. As an investor, should that worry you, or do I just collect the premium and, you know, let it be? Sometimes we are always curious, are they even actually investing these things in infrastructure anymore, or they're just asking for our money? But sometimes you look at the coupon and you're like, wow, I really can't leave that. And, you know, the moralness of it, you tend to push it to the side and pick up what's on offer. For you, is it a worry whether this money, wherever it's invested in, you know, there's always a feeling that sometimes when there are holes to fill in the budget, infrastructure bond is the way to go.
Yeah, it's you definitely want, any investor has to be concerned as to whether there are actual infrastructure projects behind the issues of infrastructure bonds. And this is where now we really rely on, you know, the Office of the Auditor General to really expedite investigations and give us conclusive, you know, linking proceeds to actual projects on the ground, and giving us the progress on the completion rates, so that at least, yes, in as much as any the particular project may not have a positive ROI, at least there's some social benefits you can account, you know, in your social cost benefit analysis. So tying to, yes, the question of whether infrastructure bond proceeds are channeled maybe to recurrent spending.
Yeah.
Which is very alarming. Yeah.
Yeah.
If that were indeed what is happening beneath the surface, it would really be tragic. Yeah.
Yeah.
But certainly, yes, we really have to have a linkage. Or let's say in every financial year, every Auditor General's report should account for, you know, in which projects have been executed from a particular infrastructure bond proceeds. And that accountability will even boost investor confidence all the more. Yeah, so 10 years down the line, where government to issue infrastructure bonds, we won't have a scenario where investors start questioning, and are these infrastructure bond proceeds actually used in any project?
Yeah. You know?
If that comes under question, then if that trust is broken, I mean, you lose it.
I think maybe the tax would even find its way back onto these papers, and we'd all have uniform papers. Yes. So, Mr. Roni, thanks so much. That's all the time we'd have for this conversation. Thanks a lot for being on this podcast and for starting our year off 2025.
Thank you so much, Kefa. It's been a real pleasure on the show.
Appreciate it.
And you're doing an amazing job, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I must commend you.